You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to Hot Texas.
The Hot Texas Swing Band, and this is episode 173, and we are so happy you're with us. Jim, where are we broadcasting from tonight?
Well, I'll tell you. We're a few miles outside of the small town of Desmet, South Dakota. We're broadcasting from a sod house, which they call a dugout. It's carved out of the side of a hill. It has no windows. So I'm glad you brought the candles. And I'm concerned about our internet connection. Did you bring the hotspot?
Yeah, they just saved us. Hotspot, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, the wind is really blowing out there. And there's dust everywhere.
Everywhere.
But I'll be okay as long as I can get all these spiders off of me.
I think we've set the atmosphere to bring on tonight's featured guest. We're so excited to have her with us. Here is Clarissa Willis. Hello, Clarissa.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, we're so happy that you're with us tonight. Have you got a little dust and spiders where you are?
Well, we've had a little bit of a controlled burn that got out of hand in the Ozark Mountains, but the smoke is gone today, so life is good.
Yeah. Very, very, very good. Well, we are delighted to have you with us. This is Clarissa Willis, and she is the author of the book we'll be talking about tonight, Carrie Ingalls, The Forgotten Sister. And Clarissa, we're going to have, Jim's going to give us a little bio.
Yep.
And then
yep,
we're going to
yep, get great.
Clarissa Willis is an award-winning children's author, educator, and longtime advocate for early learning. The 2026 inductee into the Arkansas Writers Hall of Fame, she has written 8 acclaimed picture books. Clarissa's career is characterized by her passion for empowering children through stories, often spotlighting historical figures and everyday heroes, encouraging and inspiring young readers.
And readers of all ages, yeah. Right? After having read this book, readers of all ages. So we are so happy that you're here, finally.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah. So let's kind of start a little bit, Clarissa, with tell us a little bit about your background and maybe a little bit about your personal background and your writing background.
Well, I am the product of a minister and an actress, so I had a very diverse upbringing. Yeah. I have been writing since I was in the second grade. I've written academic materials, but I've always just been fascinated by history, especially Western history and the history of people who did things that were extraordinary for their time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, absolutely.
You know, I'm going to say, in the old days, that was probably a little bit scandalous for the minister to marry an actress, wasn't it?
It was. And it was a very, very, as I said, very interesting upbringing. I'm just as comfortable passing out a collection plate and singing in the choir as I am helping my mother run her lines when she was still doing live theater.
Yeah.
So
fun.
It was really a great time to grow up. I had grandparents who were very hardworking, and I got to spend some wonderful time in rural Arkansas as well as growing up in Little Rock.
Yeah. Do you want to ask a little bit about her professional career?
Yeah, you know, you have a great career.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, particularly in the field of special care for special children. Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I jokingly say I'm a recovering speech pathologist because that's where I started, but I became just really interested in children on the autism spectrum. And so I wanted to go on with my education, and I was a single mom. So I wrote romance novels by night, and by day I got a PhD in early childhood special education, and wrote one of the main books that has been used literally all over the world for teachers to teach them about children with autism. But I've always had a very active imagination, so moving into children's fiction just seemed like a natural next step after I retired from the University of Southern Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think that I read that you have done a presentation in every state.
I have. And the one that I had not done was South Dakota, and I was able to do that 2 years ago. And that's when I first got interested, really, in Carrie Ingalls. I read a little bit about her and spent a little time there. And so it's sort of one career sort of piggybacked into the next.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Well, let's see. Do you have another question?
Well, when did you first start writing the children books? When you segued from your professional career to writing the books, how long ago was that?
Yeah.
Well, it sort of evolved. I had always been interested in writing. So much of the curriculum for young children was not inclusive. It did not include children with special needs or children who were learned in different styles. So I really got involved with Kaplan Early Learning Company, with Scholastic, and with Frog Street Press writing curriculum. And as I got involved in writing curriculum that was inclusive, I got the idea, and I realized there just aren't that many books out there. So the first book that I have that's now part of the Frog Street family was called Anderson the Ornithologist, and it was about a little boy with autism who loved birdwatch.
Okay.
And makes his first friend. And so from there, I really got interested in both writing picture books that are fantasy and fun. I did The Three Pigs and The Not So Big Bad Wolf. And then writing the nonfiction about people who really lived.
Yeah, yeah. It's just fascinating. I always think, you know, what motivates and inspires the creative spirit in authors and poets and artists and just anybody in the arts. That's just fascinating to me. So we love to spend a little time kind of, you know, digging around, find out what inspires you.
Is there a particular age group you write for?
You know, I've just moved into writing some chapter books for a little bit older elementary, but my love will always be preschoolers, 3 to 5 years old, because the brain research tells us that's the time in their life that the foundation is really going to be, it's going to be built. Uh-huh. And so I'm fascinated with the preschool age children, but I also feel like our early elementary students aren't maybe getting as much history as perhaps they did when we were all in school.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you're right.
Yeah. You know, Clarissa, you and Jim and I have someone in common. Blue Cottage Agency, of course.
Oh, yes.
Right?
They're the greatest.
Aren't they? So we're going to step away for just a moment and tip our hat to the Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. If you are a writer, they are standing by to assist you. When we come back from this little step away, we'll hear the first of 3 songs tonight. And this one, Song of the Pioneer, will set the mood for our discussion about this book. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Authors, welcome home. Every author needs a website, a home base for their brand. Professionally showcase your books and brand with a custom website landing page starting at $369. Bluebookshelf.com. It's a great feeling to be home. Contact the Blue Cottage team today to get started.
Give me hope, give me courage, and a light from above, and land that was made for the plow. Give me bread, give me water, and my share of love, and I'll get along somehow. There is game in the forest and fish in the stream, and such wonderful things in my dreams. Give me bread, give me water, and my share of love, and I'll get along somehow.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer, special guest Carissa Willis. You've just been listening to Song of the Pioneer by Al Pickman. It's from his album, Pale Moon on the Prairie.
And wasn't that just perfect?
That was great, wasn't it?
Well, welcome, welcome. So we are now going to dive in our, as we always do, taking a good, long, deep look at this wonderful book of our guest, Carissa Willis, tonight, Carrie Ingalls, The Forgotten Sister. So, Jim, do you want to start us off with your first question?
Well, yeah. Pat, what was your inspiration, Carissa? What got you started on this book?
Well, actually, what got me started on this book was my previous book, which was called Bloomers on Pike's Peak, and it was a children's picture book about the first woman that we believe to have climbed Pike's Peak, and she did so in bloomers or pants. And so I did so much research on that book, but you can't put a lot of that into a picture book. And so when I was in the Dakotas doing some traveling, I heard about Carrie, and all I knew about Carrie was she was the little girl we saw on TV that we never really saw do a whole lot. And so as I got into really researching who she was and what she did, it seemed like that a picture book wouldn't do her justice. So I thought, okay, I've written textbooks. I can write a nonfiction book that children will enjoy reading for maybe a little bit older child, if maybe a first, second, third, maybe even fourth grade child might enjoy hearing Carrie's story. Yeah. So that was my interest. And then the more I got involved with it, the more I realized she did some phenomenal things. While we all know about Laura, you know, Carrie did some, she was a woman who did some firsts as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So she, I think as we read the book, we learn that in her time period, especially as an adult or young adult, she really was doing things that women were not doing yet. But she also, with the family, gosh, they moved around a lot, didn't they, Carissa?
They really did. And you know, part of that was Charles Ingalls. Yeah. He always was looking for the next thing to do. Mm-hmm. And because he was a master carpenter, I think sometimes he would go and do a big job, like when he went and helped with the hotel. Well, when that was done, he had to go find work somewhere else. And so the family moved an awful lot. And they moved around sometimes with their relatives and then sometimes on their own. But it was always the dream of Charles Ingalls for his family to settle out west.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some of those living conditions.
Oh.
And then now we're talking about sod houses. We're talking about doubling and tripling up with relatives. A whole bunch of people in one little house.
Yeah. Well, before we get into we're going to get into homesteading in a moment, but maybe just tell us, as you were researching Carrie, what were some of the, some of her traits or some of her character, you know, her characteristics that you really just were so admired and that you wanted to be sure you brought out in the story?
I think that she was such, in her own right, such a, had such a thirst for knowledge and such a thirst for travel. I mean, she traveled places that women didn't necessarily go. She went far west. She went to the Southwest. She always seemed to sort of have inherited her father's wandering spirit a little bit.
Yeah.
And she was always, of the girls, she really never intended to marry. She always thought she was just going to be the old maid. Yeah. While she did marry later in life, she was, as a single woman on the Eastern Seaboard, you couldn't own property. You rarely worked. And in the West, it was such a new frontier that she had the opportunity to not only own property, but to work in a newspaper. And then later to work in, become a female editor of a newspaper. You know, back when, in the dark ages, when I was graduating high school, I was going to be a great journalist. That was my dream. And I quickly found out that was not for me. And I think that's one of the things that drew me to Carrie, was that she was a journalist at a time that women just weren't.
Yeah. Well, and she also, she was writing, but she was also setting the type. She was, she was learning how, you know, oh my gosh, that's just amazing. That was part of the newspaper world, was setting type. That's just astounding today to me.
You know, I don't think people realized how meticulous a job that was. Each letter had to be placed in a little row, and you had to be a good speller, and you had to see what it was going to look like. And I think that's one of the things that helped her, is that she was a detailed oriented person. She was relatively educated for the time, and therefore she could spell.
Yeah.
So she was able to do a job that traditionally was not given to women. Her first job at 19, she got $1 a week.
I know. It's a different world.
It's a different world.
I remember I used to get $1 a day, but never $1 a week.
Yeah. I remember an hour babysitting, you know. We are going to talk about homesteading in just a moment. But before we do, we're going to hear a little bit about the life of a homesteader. And we're going to hear, and Sam is listening for me to announce it. This is Little Old Shanty on the Claim. And we're going to take a listen to this. And when we come back, we'll be talking about homesteading. Don't go away.
Looking rather seedy now while holding down my claim, though my victuals are not always served the best. And the mice play shyly round me as I nestle down to sleep in my little old sod shanty on the claim. The hinges are of leather and the windows have no glass. The board roof lets the howling blizzard in. And there's a hungry old coyote sneaking through the grass round my little old sod shanty on the claim.
Welcome back. I'm Roddy Woo, the writer, Carissa Willis. You've just been listening to Little Old Shanty on the Claim Hills of Early Morn by Liz Masterson.
Yeah, from her album, So Wonderful, Hills of Early Morn. Another, just a great song. You know, there are lots of songs about life in a sod shanty, but they're not always quite as upbeat and as joyful as Liz's song. So
that song was joyful. I wonder kind of what that particular person might have had to drink when they were enjoying, because it was a tough life. The mortality rate among children was very high. As was evidenced even in the Ingalls family, the loss of their first son. But these shanties were made of mud. Some of them were made of tar paper, which is basically just paper dipped in tar. It's exactly what it sounds like. In fact, when Carrie became a homeowner, her first shanty was a tar paper shanty on land that she bought and purchased with money she had made working at the newspapers. And she homesteaded it. Yeah. And homesteading was not for the faint of heart at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's, I want to digress for just a moment. In your research, Clarissa, did you travel to a lot of the locations where Carrie or the family had lived? Or tell us just a little bit about the research that went into this.
Well, I tried to go, of course, to some of the places. I've been to DeSmet. I have been to a few places. But what really fascinated me was I found this little book that most people don't even know exists. I don't know if you can see it.
Yeah, I can
see it. It's called Little Newspapers on the Prairie. And it was actually written by a historical society. And it was about Carrie's life and her life in the newspaper world. And so then I went back and looked at some of the original documents and then some of the books that had been written about the Wilder family. Fortunately, Carrie's younger sister kept very good records, and she kept a diary, and she actually wrote about how excited she was when Carrie got her first job working at the newspaper. And Carrie would live at home, and then she'd move away a while, and then she'd live at home. And so there was that was part of the research. I will tell you a funny thing. You know, as an author, we hear and we love to hear from our readers. But I did hear from one reader that said, I obviously, when I did the book, it was inaccurate because I obviously had not watched the television show. And I really enjoyed the humor in that because when television is for entertainment. And, you know, the television show is very beloved, but they took great liberties with where it took place and the various things that happened. It was difficult for me being a retired or a professor emeriti not to get too technical. And I tried to keep it where it was something that children could read because Absolutely. There were things that, you know, I could have put in there, but I didn't want to get too graphic.
Well, I just think that's so interesting. Was there in the research or you know, was there anything that just surprised you, like even if it didn't make it in the book, like, oh my gosh, I never would have thought of that?
I think what really surprised me is when in 1880 they had those horrible blizzards in the Dakotas. I mean, they didn't have weathermen that would get on the TV and tell you what the weather was going to be, that the train stopped coming. And, you know, many of the homesteaders, that was their only connection to the outside world. It was their connection for mail. It was their connection for newspapers. And most importantly, it was their connection for food. And so how many people during that horrible winter of 1880, when Carrie herself was 10 and nearly died, how many people died and how many children died?
Yeah.
And they just couldn't get the train there because they couldn't keep the tracks cleared.
Yeah.
And it was a very devastating time for many families.
Yeah. And in fact, since we're bringing up the blizzard, and that was one of the hazards that did go on.
Sure.
Setters like grasshoppers and other things. We're going to ask Mr. Sam, our DJ tonight, to play the blizzard. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
There's a blizzard coming on. How I'm wishing I was home. For my pony's lame and he can hardly stand. Listen to that northern sigh. If we don't get home, we'll die. For it's only 7 miles to Marianne. It's only 7 miles. Marianne, You can bet we're on her mind, for it's nearly supper time. And I'll bet there's hot biscuits in the pan. Lord, my hands feel like they're froze. There's a numbness in my toes. It's only 5 more miles to Mary Ann. It's only 5 more miles to Mary Ann.
You've just been listening to Barry Ward doing his rendition of The Blizzard from his Lonesome County Road album.
And you really want to listen to this whole song to find out if he makes it to Mary Ann.
You know, what's the mechanics? What were the mechanics of homesteading? How did that work?
Well, you know, the first chapter in the book says Uncle Sam is rich enough. And this was one of the headlines in the newspapers, especially over in the East and the South. You know, Uncle Sam is rich enough to give you land if you're strong enough to go out and claim it. And they made it seem like that you just showed up on the land and, you know, you built a house and you lived happily ever after and you were prosperous. And what they really didn't tell you is a lot of that land was land that nobody wanted.
Okay.
Some of it was taken from Indigenous people, which is, again, something I didn't get into in the book. But this was not rich, fertile land. This was land that was raw, and it was land that was sometimes prairie or even desert. And they had to hack it out, building what kind of, they had to live on the land for 5 years, yeah, unless they had the money to buy the land outright, which was very, very rare. They had to live on the land for 5 years. They had to prove they lived there for 5 years. They had to prove that they had to put up some sort of a structure, usually a sod house or a shanty. Sometimes they would have a stove of some kind in there. Sometimes they would not. And they had to live there for 5 years. And then they had to send paperwork to Washington. And then they would be approved as landowners. Well, many of the people who went out west were not educated. They were not people of means. And so some of them missed out on their land. In fact, at one point, Charles made a mistake. He homesteaded some land that he thought was available for homesteading, but he never filed the claim with the local office. And they actually were kicked off the land because the land did not belong to them. It was not homesteadable land.
Wow.
So it's just, it was really important that you had to jump through these hoops and you had to prove that you lived on that land for 5 years and you either kept livestock, raised crops, or did something on the land. You couldn't just put up the shanty and then move to town.
Yeah.
You had to establish a residency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some of the proof, and this is where Carrie kind of comes back in the story again, because her newspaper work connected very directly to how people proved that they had done the work, right? You want to talk a little bit about proving up and proof and all of that? Yeah.
Yeah, that was, to me, that was fascinating because unfortunately, a lot of people, some immigrants, some people who didn't really know any differently, would live on the land for 3 or 4 years. And then a land baron or someone who wanted to have a big piece of property could simply take it away from them, right out from under them. And so one of the things that a man named Mr. Stein actually did, he was called the Proof King, is he developed a way with his newspaper where people could put in a little ad, a little classified ad. I believe it cost 25 cents, and they would do it for 5 times to say that they had lived on the land. And it was they had to prove up that they had lived on the land. And so they had to, one of the ways they could show proof, because they might not have necessarily even had any family members that had survived. And so one of the ways that they could show proof that they had been on that land for 5 years, and they could then send their paperwork to Washington or send their paperwork in, would be to put these ads in the newspaper. So while Mr. Stein got very, very wealthy by doing the proofing, and it was Carrie who often helped people write these articles and these proofs that they had lived on the land. And so what happened in several instances is that that's really how the newspaper made their money. There would be, you know, these towns didn't have 50 stores. They might have had two stores who might have taken a little advertising in a local paper. But once everybody had proved they owned the land, many of the newspapers would close because they no longer really had a source of revenue. And then Carrie would move to another area, or Mr. Stein would go to another area, buy a newspaper, and then they would stay there until a greater number of people had proved up that they had lived on the land. And then ultimately he found out through whether it was legal or not legal, there's some debate about that. Later, he found out he could do that with the mining companies. That they had to prove that they, and instead of paying 25 cents for their ad, they had to pay $5. So, you know, he was, in some versions, a bad guy. In my version of the story, at least he provided a mechanism, for Carrie to have a career as a journalist, and B, for many of these settlers who might not have been very well educated to be able to prove and to meet the complex requirements of land ownership.
Yeah. We're going to step away one more time for just a moment to tell all of our listeners about one of the places that you can order many of the books of our author guests, including tonight's featured title. And I'm holding it up again. It's a really wonderful cover. Carrie Ingalls, The Forgotten Sister by Clarissa Willis. Find their books on the Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. Clarissa is going to share a passage from her book when we come back, so you do not want to go away. We'll be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking about this great book here. Carrie Ingalls, The Forgotten Sister.
Yeah, why didn't they do a TV show about her or a Netflix series? She was into so many interesting things, traveling all over the West. Don't you think it's time we had a Carrie Ingalls show? What do you think?
I would love that, and I'd love for them to base this book on it. That would be wonderful.
There you go.
I would.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
So would you like for me? I'm just going to read a little bit about the blizzards.
Because,
That's good.
I'm a Southern girl. I was born and raised, although I have lived all over. I've lived in Oregon and I've lived in North Carolina. I had never really seen a blizzard until this last December when I was in Northern Finland. And we were out and we actually saw a white-out blizzard. And I realized when you've experienced something. I mean, this is why I think it's so important for children to have multi-sensory experiences, because when you experience it for yourself, when I was standing there in the wind and it was blowing and there was snow drifts and I couldn't even literally see anything, I knew I could go into the building. In fact, some of the people on the tour thought I was a little crazy because I was standing out in this blizzard. But I it gave me an understanding of really what it meant. And so I'm going to read just a little bit about the blizzards. As they continued into January of 1881, the railroad made a decision that significantly affected Carrie and her family. They would not deliver any more supplies that winter. The school was shut down because there wasn't even enough coal to keep the children warm. But two brothers owned a store, Ross and Almanzo Wilder, and Charles Ingalls helped them save their wheat and bring it into town. And the brothers would sell hay to the other townspeople, but they sold Charles, to thank him, one bag of wheat. And this wheat is what kept the Ingalls family alive during that horrible blizzard. They survived while many others did not. For months, they lived on brown bread made from flour ground with the seed wheat in a coffee mill. And it certainly was a time of malnutrition. And in some ways, Carrie never got over that particular winter. She was always frail and had health issues relating to that period of malnutrition that lasted throughout her life.
Yeah. Well, you know, the blizzards, when we were reading the book, the blizzards were hitting the East, where we originally spent a lot of time. You know, New York City, when New York City gets hit with a blizzard, oh my goodness.
Sure.
And it was widespread, and we had friends and family sending us photos from, you know, Northern Jersey and Connecticut and all. And I think out here, you know, if we get an inch of snow in Albuquerque, parts of New Mexico can get more, and we need it in the desert. You want that to come as often as you can, you know, but we get little dusting and nobody knows how to drive in it. Nobody knows what to do with it. And you think about the parts of the world and the parts that have just gone through a horrible, you know, a week ago, you know, so.
Well, you know, we say in Arkansas, if one flake oozes out of a cloud, we're going to close the state for the whole week. So, you know,
that's good.
I had not been around that. So that was a terrible hardship. And I think we take for granted, you know, how that we live in insulated homes and we live in homes with heat. And that was not always the case. There were people that actually took to burning their wagons at some point because coal was a major source of fuel at that time and heat. And without the railroads to deliver it, they were having to burn whatever they could find to keep their families warm and alive.
Yeah, and we're also so spoiled that we sort of know something's coming, even hurricanes, rarely a tornado, unfortunately. But, you know, people just know to go to the store and stock up because there's something, you know, on its way. So there's we live in such a different world today than these folks did.
We only have about one character.
Yeah,
maybe.
We're going to move a little bit now. Characters, Clarissa, because this book does have a variety of characters. My first question, do you want to ask that question we were talking about earlier today?
Well, we could. We didn't talk about this question before, but if you could sit down with one of these characters, talk, which one would you choose?
Oh, without a doubt, Carrie.
Yeah.
Because I just would want to know, you know, what motivated her, because she was just all the time doing something different and something new. And then, you know, later in life, she was working at a newspaper and quite surprised when she was 40 and finally got a proposal of marriage. And in her later life, raised two children, one of whom was deaf.
Yeah.
And so she ultimately, you know, became a mother. But it's just, I think I would want to talk to her. And I think I would want to talk to Carolyn Ingalls. Because while we talk about Charles, and she's the one that kept the family together.
Oh, yeah.
She had such an entrepreneurial spirit. I mean, once they were allowed to stay in a borrowed home to watch over the railroad supplies for the winter, and she turned it into a boarding house and a makeshift restaurant.
Yeah, she did.
So yeah. She was always there, you know, behind the scenes. Mary's blindness affected the whole family. Laura, being a little older than Carrie, was the first one that actually, you know, went to work to try to raise money to help send Carrie to a special school. But it was a friend of the family's that they had actually, a minister and his wife, that they had actually befriended when they were trying to come out west. Right. And as a result of that relationship, he helped Carrie get a scholarship. I mean, he helped Mary get a scholarship, and she was able to go to the school for the blind. So, you know, the way that the different people that they interacted with later came back to help them in some way, I think was, to me, one of the most fascinating things. But I would want to talk to Carrie, because I would want to know, you know, I would hope that she knew, but I don't think she did know in her lifetime what an impact she had on the lives of other people, mm-hmm. just by helping them put in those little newspaper articles.
Mm-hmm.
Because in some ways, I mean, Laura certainly left us a legacy of wonderful children's books that are classics. But Carrie helped real people realize their dreams.
Yeah. I know you have a question.
When we talk about this crazy guy, Charles.
Charles,
yeah, I would have thought Caroline would say to him, you know, Charles, we will one more time. I'm going to shoot you.
Is that why he wandered? She just say, Charles, just get out of here. You know, come back when you got it figured out.
You know, I don't know, because I know work was much harder to find back then than what the people were led to believe that it would be when they got out, you know, into this new land and this new territory. I know once he walked, I don't even remember in the research how many miles before it actually became, before he found work. He walked 40 something miles, which if you think about that, that's a long, and found work. And then again, came home. And at that point, that's when they had a little bit of money and were able to rent a house in town so that the girls could go back to school.
Cool.
Because when you're living out on the prairie, you're living out from town, it's very difficult when the weather is, when it's pouring down rain, when it's snowing, for children to get to school.
Sure.
So, you know, he was always looking for the next thing. Always looking for the next adventure. I think he was quite the adventurer.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's probably very true. And with Carol, they seemed to be a couple that understood what the dynamic was there, that she let, you know, that he went off and she dealt with it.
And it seems like
the family stayed together. I think is it Grace, the sister Grace, that was the closest to Carrie? Was that Grace?
I believe it was Grace that was the, she was the youngest one.
Okay.
When you look at Carrie was born in 1870. She was born roughly just a very few years after the Civil War. She was born in Kansas. There had been, you know, I think there were lots of people that were left homeless or left without maybe the roots that they had previously, who really wanted to go out west and start over. And I think there was some of this with Charles. He always kept wanting to move west, and always kept wanting to find something grander.
Yeah.
I do know they spent a great deal of time in South Dakota, especially after Mary lost her sight. They called it the brain sickness. I think now it was probably meningitis, encephalitis, mm-hmm. things that antibiotics mm-hmm. could possibly cure.
Yeah.
But at that time, there was nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she was probably lucky that she survived it all.
Yeah. I'm just looking at time, Clarissa. I can't believe how it just flew by. So could you tell us what's next? What are you working on? Anything?
Sure. And I do want to tell people that are listening, because I'm a teacher, I write free resource guides for all of my books. And they're all on my website, clarissawillis.com. They are free for teachers, librarians, parents, grandparents, full of activities. But what's next for me? And I actually got the cover today. Oh. Don't know if you all can see this.
Oh, we can see it.
It says, "You're not from around here, are you?"
Oh, that looks fun.
I got the idea of what would happen if a little cowboy, a little fella on his birthday trip with his parents, with his new cowboy hat and his new cowboy boots, went out to Sedona, Arizona, and perhaps meet someone who was not from around here, because that is the term they use for things that they can't explain. So
that is so great.
That's the next one. And then, because I did so much research on Julia Archibald Holmes and her Bloomers on Pike's Peak as a picture book, I have just got mounds of research on her. So I'm going to take her story, because she did a lot more than just climb Pike's Peak. Okay. She ran the Underground Railroad with her parents when she was 14.
Wow. Okay.
So, and went on to be a great suffragette. So I think I'm going to also look at writing a chapter book using some of the research I did from that book.
All right. And where can people find you and follow you quickly? We want, Jim has a quote to read in just a moment.
Sure. On Instagram, I'm Clarissa W. Author. On Facebook, I'm Clarissa Willis Author. And then ClarissaWillis.com is where my website is. And then SolanderPress.com is where you can also find not only resource guides for my books, but resource guides for lots of other books too.
Great. All right, Jim, quickly, do you have a quote?
Well, we have one right here.
Yeah, we're almost. Yeah, we're almost out of time.
Yeah, this is from passages in the book. And this actually is regarding what we've been talking about, moving around and moving around. And it goes like this. Ma and Paul Inglis were very excited to settle down and become part of the Dakota Territory. They had lived in many places, and as the girls grew older, they knew it was time to settle down and stay in one place. They wanted Laura and Carrie to have the opportunity to make friends and go to school. Unfortunately, the Inglis family was very unprepared for what they would face in the new town.
Oh, yeah. Turn the page. Clarissa, thank you so much for being with us tonight. It was just delightful to finally meet you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and I'll hopefully see you at Western Writers of America this summer.
We're working on it. We're working on it. We want to say a thank you to Sam Hassan, owner of LA Talk Radio, who was our DJ again tonight, celebrating 18 years with LA Talk Radio, Luke Cottage and Clicks by Madison, Alex Dormont and the Hot Texas Swing Band. And then next week we kick off March, the first Thursday of the month. So of course, Henry C. Park will be with us, film editor for True West Magazine and author of this great book on the greatest Westerns ever made and the people who made them. And coming along with Henry, Bob Bozbell, editor of True West Magazine, and Stuart Rosebrook, editor at large. True West is in the house next Thursday, and you will want to be here. So, Jim, do you have a final quote for the night?
Well, first, we say thank you again. And then, as we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing.
Thank you.
And we'll keep reading.
And we'll keep reading. We'll see you down the trail. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.